In the Fale is a music show on ABC Radio Australia, hosted by me, Paola Tukefu. I'll be spinning my favorite tunes from dancehall to disco, calypso to country, reggae to roots, and hip-hop to house music, from across the eras to keep the kids and the aunties happy. If it has a pumping groove, I'll be bringing it to you to bump you into the weekend.
Search up In the Fale to listen online or find it in the ABC Listen app.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Yes, kia ora na, happy. Kia ora na, happy Monday, and welcome everyone to Nijan Footy, the number one place for Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. I was thinking of, how do you say hello in Spanish?
Oh, hola.
Hola?
It's definitely, were you thinking goal? Like goal?
It was like, hola, kia ora na, all in one, and goal, but Spain winning the World Cup. I thought I'd start with that one. The World Cup winners, champions of the world. Congratulations. If you are part Spanish, I heard Cook Islands, there's, you know, parts, people from Spain in there. But look, Nijan Footy Mondays, welcome everyone to our show today. Sammy, my Coey.
What a start, bro. That's a flying start. That's one of your best. That is one of your best.
What have we got for the show today?
Firstly, we'll have our English lessons after the show as well. But anyway, Nat, we have a big show planned. Yeah, congratulations to Spain. Did you have them in your picks or anything like that through the work stuff that you do?
Yeah. Those work competitions.
Where you pull out the...
I won it.
Did you win it?
Yeah,
I won it. You had Spain.
Guess what I won?
A feed.
Nothing.
Oh.
A thumbs up.
Oh. Mate, they don't do it like how they do it here in Nijan Footy. There's always something on the line, so that's pretty disappointing. But anyway, congratulations to Spain. But we've also got, obviously, NRL Round 20, Nations Championship and Nations Cup in the Rugby Union. The Fijian Drua, they're off to the big dance against to the Waratahs. So we'll check in with Shelley Long with that news as
Women's
well.
Women's Fijian Drua team.
Yes, as well as the NRLW news as well. And our guest for today, this is one that we pre-recorded and we said on Friday, you have to listen to this bloke speak, because it is Joe Grimer. He is looking after all the pathways and talent identification over there in PNG to help set up a successful PNG Hunters and eventually PNG Chiefs team. So pretty amazing around the ins and outs that goes into setting up the PNG team, isn't it, T?
Yeah, well, with myself living here in Australia and Sydney, you get to, you know, you probably underestimate the resources that, you know, countries like Papua New Guinea don't have compared to what we have here. You know, Joey Grimer, I'm sure that he's having to deal with a number of different, you know, things to help create a great environment for the Papua New Guinea people. But I'm keen to hear all those stories.
Absolutely. Make sure you stick around for that. We have a big chat during the show with Joe Grimer from PNG.
Kia ora, everyone. My name's Cal Edel, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
Round 20, Sammy. Not much. Usually every week we've got something to talk about.
Well, there's no other origin. Than the games. Yeah, there's no origin around. There's obviously a media circus always surrounding your standard teams, but we've already done that to death on Friday around the Jerome Luai stuff. But it is nice to probably talk a bit of footy.
About, yeah.
The on-field action.
Let's get some footy going here. Round 20. We mentioned the Broncos with their huge win over the Panthers last Thursday. Can they make a run home for the finals? What are your thoughts, Amy?
If Reece Walsh can perform like that consistently, they've got every chance. I'll give them a chance if Reece can do that, but it is a tough ask to be able to pretty much go undefeated from here on in.
Can they probably afford to lose one,
okay,
maybe two, but the for and against would have to, they'd have to get that for and against.
Yeah, okay.
But guess who else is on the same points as the Broncos?
Dogs.
The Tigers.
Oh, the Tigers.
Yes, the Tigers on the same points. So,
well, I can't say the same for them after their performance against the Bulldogs, not scoring a single point, but the Dogs, they look not bad out there this week.
Yeah, in other games, the Sharks, they edge a win over the Newcastle Knights, 20 points to 18. Look, a battle in that whenever those teams in the top eight play each other, I reckon we got to get a good sense of the quality of our game and bit of a sneak peek into finals footy. But the Sharks, they did edge this one, 20 points to 18, only two points the difference. KP, Kalen Ponga, he missed.
Goal kicking again.
Three kicks he missed. Greg Marju, he scored two tries. But for the Sharkies, Will Kennedy, the Tongan fisherman, Sione Katoa, and Ronaldo Mulitalo, they all scored tries for the Sharks.
I saw the Tongan fisherman. He got his try celebration correct this time around, the bow and arrow.
He didn't have the bow coming flinging back in his face.
He let the arrow go. Nice work, my friend.
You could see when he scored too.
He was happy.
He meant to do it. But in other games, the Raiders, they stay in the hunt for a top eight finish with an important win against the Rabbitohs, 34 points to 24. KO Weeks was on fire. He scored a double. The Bulldogs, they kept the West Tigers scoreless in their match. I know that you picked them for as your smoky, the West Tigers.
No, for the women's game. For Sullers game.
Okay, well, lucky you didn't get this one either. So the Bulldogs won 32 points to zero. And the opening try to our good friend, the Fijian flyer, Jethro Rinakama. And I just wanted to give a quick shout out to the Tongan veteran, Felice Kalfusi. He's also scored a try, got off the nudie, scoring a try for the Dolphins in their victory
over the
Cowboys. But look, their response, the Dolphins, from last week's performance, losing 66 points to nil against the Sharks, and then they go and play a pretty informed Cowboys team. Dolphins winning this one, 36 points to 16. On one of the shows, Kurt Donohue, the Fijian international, he got interviewed and the question was asked, I only mentioned this because we spoke about it on Friday, so I was like, did you just flush last week's performance against the Sharks to 66 points to nil? And he goes, nah, the next morning they addressed it, they got into the video, they watched it, and then they had to learn from it and then move forward. And I believe that week going into a Cowboys game, it's a good turnaround.
I'd love to have been a fly on the wall in that review with the team meeting, just but more like player cam, watching the reactions, like knowing at certain point in that game where you've gone, oh no, this is my mistake coming
up. Have you ever been in those meetings where you're after a big loss and you know that you've made a couple big mistakes, and there's like if the guy that's playing the video on the screen, yes, they've got the list of plays,
yes,
and you just see like your name there, you're like, oh bro, that's my play, that's the one where I didn't make the tackle, or that's the one where I dropped the ball, and you're just waiting for it to come. As soon as it goes, you just put your head
down.
That's
your playlist, because you can see, like, for those who don't know, in a team review, so, like, sometimes you can see the playlist on the clips that are coming up because they get cut, and then you can see S Wykes missed tackle, S Wykes knock on, or something like that. Yeah. You're going, oh.
And they're just making their way through, and you just know yours is coming up. But
and
how sickening is that?
Do you know what's worst after that? Is when they read the team out for the week that's coming up, and you've just been highlighted like that, and then your name's not on the team list, you've been dropped out of the team, and you're going, oh my goodness.
And it was a tactic from the coach saying, if I show this, then I don't have to pick him. And I just thought
right there, right there. Justifies his decision. But anyway, good to see that the Dolphins turned it around.
Yeah, it's good to talk some footy. Round 20. This week we have round 21, and we will talk more about that on Friday. Remember, you can hear every NRL game live on ABC Radio Australia. And I know we've got a bit of rugby union to get through, Sammy. So let's kick us off.
Talo Falava, my name is Pipisana Patufilo, and you're listening to Nisian Footy.
Yes, you are listening to Nisian Footy with myself, Sammy Wykes, and Tinidao Arona, and we've just wrapped up Rugby League, and we're moving on to Rugby Union. The Nations Cup and the Nations Championships unfolded over the weekend, and we'll start with the big one, Fiji versus Scotland. Scotland winning this one 33 points to 17, over 50,000 people at Murrayfield in Scotland, like amazing scenes, you know, considering that was a Fiji home game.
I was just thinking when you mentioned that, Fiji get the ticket sales.
Yeah, they do. So that's all them. Good. So all
that's
of
a
these,
win. That's a
that's
win.
That's a huge win. And you think about like the ticket sales, it's going to go into their own stadium in Fiji. That's where it's headed. So this, hopefully in the next 10 years' time, we get to see these games played on Fiji soil.
In regards to the performance, Fiji do a lot better this weekend?
Yeah, much improved performance this week. I know they didn't get the win, but I think compared to last week, the turnaround, the attitude shift, the intent on how they wanted to play, big, big difference. And they were the better team right up until about the 60th minute. And I was really impressed with Fiji's line speed in defence. Some of the shots that they were putting on, they were absolutely rocking the Scottish players. And I was also very impressed around their set piece. That improved a lot, especially their more defence. They had to defend that a fair few times against Scotland and held them out. Celestino Ravutamanda's try was special, just on the edge, finds a bit of space, like he's playing in the backyard, little grubber kick for himself, gets the regather and scores. So they got out to a pretty good lead. I thought what let them down is probably what's let down all of our Pacific Island teams is discipline.
Discipline.
Yeah, man. It's offside penalties. Like offside penalties for all of our Pacific Island teams is an issue.
Is that one where if they just take a couple steps back?
Half a step.
And half it's a more, step. Would that be under fatigue? Or is it more awareness? Is it attention to detail?
I reckon it's a mix of all of that. Like it's up here understanding, yes, if you're tired, okay, that's okay. But when you make the tackle and stand back up, it's a conscious effort to know that your automatic reaction is to take an extra step.
And saying that, does that mean when the coach is coaching the team, trying to create habits of like, how do you recognize that you're onside first thing as you make the tackle or when there's a tackle being made? So, you know, look for the ref or, you know, what's the sign there to create that habit?
Yeah, I reckon during training, you have to be hard on it at training because when the ruck speed is so quick at training because sometimes it's not full noise, and you can fall into the trap of just not getting back onside quick enough. Or you're offside because the ball's already gone. So
and there's no ref holding you accountable at training.
Yeah. So like either get the referees in there or someone to ref, you know, your scrimmages and really be hard on blowing penalties if you're offside at training. And make those habits, you know, around go for a lap, push-ups or something different. So they're consciously aware of that. So they needed to improve that. They gave away yellow card as well, so that's when the turning point started to happen. But I really believe that the turning point was a big mistake from the referee. I don't like to go off at the referees.
Oh, you're going the referee route.
I'm going the referee this time. You know, so the penalty at the breakdown when Fiji was in front, in rugby, if I make the tackle and I fall to ground with you, or like if I make the tackle and I want to jackal the ball, I have to release.
Get on my feet.
Yeah, get on your feet. And if I'm on my feet, I've got to let my arms show that I've released the tackler so he's gone there and then I can have a crack at the ball.
Yep.
So a Fijian player chop tackled one of the Scottish players. The next man in from the inside came straight over the ball. Should have been a penalty to Fiji. But he gave the penalty to Scotland and said the tackler didn't release. And I'm like going at home. He didn't make the tackle. His hand might have been on him, but he did not make the tackle. That should have been Fiji's penalty with a line out, you know, on the other end attacking. Instead, Scotland got the penalty. They line out. They scored two phase later, and that's when the wheels started to fall off.
No challenge of rugby union?
No challenge. I think that comes down to the captaincy as well around, you know, making sure that, like, ref, can you have a look at that again?
If he does, can the ref say
it slows it down enough for the replay? Then potentially for our TMO, or
can change it.
But I thought that was again, you're always going to be, you know, on the end of a 50-50 call with the ref. But I just feel like that was a massive moment in the game that changed momentum.
How long and what was the score?
Fiji were up. I can't remember what the actual score was, but it was just before. It was after half time, so like they could have continued on with scoring points because they were on the front foot. It wasn't meant to be, but I think just from a point of view around, they turned things around from a massive loss against England. Very well done. But let's go to the Nations Cup. Samoa versus Romania. Absolute heartbreak for Samoa, losing after the bell, 38 points to 37. And it looked like Samoa was sailing home after Miracle Failangi's try when that gave him a 31-14 lead with 20 minutes to go. But what Romania were really good at, every time they got into the A zone to attack, they came away with points. As that pressure piled on, Samoa again gave penalties away and they still held on. But I thought even with the comeback for Romania, 90 seconds to go, Samoa kicks a penalty goal. They go up 37 points to 33. Kickoff about to happen. 60 seconds to go on the clock. They get a penalty. Samoa gets a penalty from the kickoff and they're starting to wind down. So it's about 45 seconds left on the clock. They choose to go to a line out to kick it out. And I just thought that was the wrong option.
Mm.
The reason why I say that, like in rugby, what you try and do, if you've got 45 seconds on the clock, and if you're even if you're 22 meters out from your goal line, you either take the tap or take the scrum. The less of the 50-50 contest.
Whereas you've got your ball, you've got the ball, more of a chance of the ball staying in your hands.
And then you just wind down the clock from there. You can play either side of the ruck and you wind it down.
But instead, they go to the line out. Then Romania, let me guess, get it back.
They still don't get it back. It was scrappy though. So even though they got it back, Samoa possession, they go to ground. Boom, Romanian players straight over the ball. Penalty.
Oh.
And so 80th minute, they kick down there more. They get a penalty. A few phases later, they score 2 minutes after the bell to steal the win over Samoa. So absolutely devastated for our Manu Samoa boys. So they'll be disappointed with not taking the chocolates for that game. And then in the other game, Tonga versus Portugal. Tonga went down 32 points to 28. Look, two yellow cards back-to-back for Tonga. It was just those repeat infringements that really hurt the Tongan side. I thought Portugal were really good at their line speed, chopping the big Tongans, and they were really good at speeding up the play. So every time Romania got a penalty, quick tap, they were off. So for Tonga, it's again, I think the fitness levels, cohesion, more time together, that will improve their performances. They've got the right framework. They just need to be better at their execution and not giving away too many penalties. So that's Test 40 done for, I think, for a little bit.
Okay, so no more games.
There's the All Blacks will be playing the Japan, so they'll move into like the South African Test Series. I think Australia's got Japan at some point, but I need to check. I'll have that information for you on Friday.
Speaking of the All Blacks, how good did Adi go on the weekend?
Oh, mate, they're special. Humming, eh? They are humming at the moment, the ABs.
When I was watching that, I was thinking, I was going to ask you the question, what are your thoughts on them preparing for next year's World Cup?
I think they're in a good spot. And what will give us a better indication if they are in a good spot is how they go in the South African tour. They've got four tests over there, I believe. And I think they are, I think even Dave Rennie said it, that he wants to bring back that hard-nosed All Blacks
character. We'll park that one. We'll speak more about it in either Friday or future Nijin Footy shows. But let's head over to Shelley Long to cover all things women's, Super Rugby and NRLW.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Yes, joining us on this beautiful Monday is Shelley Long, our PNG Orchid star. Shelley, let's go straight to Super Rugby and give us the good news.
Yes, the great news is that the Fijian Drua are now into the grand final. They will play a home grand final too this coming weekend, which is super exciting for them. Unfortunately, though, the Western Force weren't able to hold out the Waratahs on the weekend with a 33-22 point game in that. The first half, the Waratahs were just too good for them, 26 points to nil. The Western Force ended up coming back in the second half. However, it wasn't enough. For me, Bulecki was outstanding, though. She has been one to watch throughout the last couple of seasons. But for me, it was when the ball went up into the air, she competed for it and she managed to get a run away with it and score her own try in that semi-final.
Yeah, the Waratahs will meet the Drua in the grand final. The best thing about this, it will be in Fiji as well. So looking forward to that at Churchill Park in Lautoka. My pump-up speech for Sarah Nagama mustn't have worked because, just some honest words around, mate, just get the job done.
Yes,
get
Sarah,
it done.
Sarah playing for the
Western Force in the lock. Seen, no reply, but that's all good. But I think, you know, Shel, that's this will be, I want to say it's like maybe the fourth time now that the Drua will be playing the Tars in a grand final match. So there's a really good rivalry here. And for the Drua, man, they were dominant from start to finish, 31 points to 5. I thought Nosewa, their loose head prop, was outstanding. Goro, their 10. Atelete Buna, their winger. But they were dominant from start to finish, weren't they, Shel?
Yeah, they were. And I think they've just really tightened up their defence, which is something that we've touched on over the last couple of weeks, was around that loose ruck area. But for them, a lot of the tries that they've been scored on is around the edges now. So I think that's something that they can really be impressed with. Lomani, for me, was someone who stood out, and I think going into that grand final will be another name to watch out for in there. With the Waratahs, they did play a great semi-final, but I think moving forward, the Drua and how they've continued to improve each game will definitely come out firing in front of their home crowd.
The best thing about the Drua at the moment, what I'm like, is they're really confident in the way that they're playing. There's been times when you've watched them play and you think, oh, like, do they know what they're doing? It's sort of like hot potato style of footy, but there's real clear and concise a way that they know that they want to play, and their confidence comes from the defence, what you're saying, not overcommitting to the breakdown. Really good width in the defence, and sometimes where the space is, you're right, Shil, is just on the edges, not through the middle. So they've really tightened that up well. So they're going to need it against the Waratahs. So hopefully they fill the hill at Churchill Park and they can lift the trophy this weekend against the Tars. So we will be looking forward to that one. But we will shift over to NRLW. Some big scores there this weekend, or last weekend, sorry.
Yes, the Roosters, they got over the Raiders, 22 points to 18, a very close one. But what I want to talk about, Shelley, in the NRLW is a Tongan international, Lavinia Tauhalaliku, who played for the Warriors and played her old club. Talk us through that one, Shel.
Yes, unfortunately for the Cowboys, it is their third loss of the season, 3 from 3, unfortunately, going down 42 points to 4. It was a tough game to watch, and I think for the Cowboys it would be a tough game to play. But for the Warriors, their signings have been incredible, and I think when you look at the likes of Lavinia scoring 4 tries in that game, a lot of them were just hard barge overs as well on the outside. So the Cowboys will need to reassess. The Warriors, however, are bounced back after taking a loss to a really great win, and I think that'll give them some confidence.
Looking at the other games, which one are you most surprised about?
For me, it would have to be the Brisbane Broncos beating the West Tigers 40 points to 12. I think the West Tigers came out of the gates really well, but I think in terms of that game originally, it was 6-0. And then for a final score of 40 points to 12, I think they probably need to tighten up a few things there. But they're doing really well considering they did have, over the last couple of seasons, a lot of losses to their name. So
did you see Salah's try?
Nah, talk us through it.
Oh, man, she hit this line upright. You know, she's short. So, like, she was, like, full-on standing upright, but still very short. But I think it was a left.
Wow.
No, because the way it looked, because the person that, I don't know who was trying to defend her, like, it was a full-on fend straight to the chest and, like standing upright. Bang, gets her away. It would have been about, well, how far out do you reckon, Shelley? It would have been about 30 metres?
30
metres to the try line, and she got over. Like, just
where was the fullback?
I don't know. She was coming across. Oh, she tackled it, but she ended up still scoring. But just the way she fended off that the inside defender, it was awesome because she was so much taller than her. Like, boom, get off me. And those legs were going. So I thought, man, she would have been stoked with that one, but obviously disappointed with the result.
I feel like Tigers is our, well, is Nijin Footy's favourite NRLW team.
Anyone that's a host on the show that's represented.
Oh, sorry,
team.
And Cowboys.
When you were playing, Shelley, the Cowboys, that was our team too. But because you're not playing yet, nah, Cowboys no good to me until you get in there.
Another big score there. Newcastle Knights versus the Dragons, 38 points to 0. How good are the Knights going so far? You've been impressed with the way they've been playing their footy.
Oh, I have been really impressed with how the Knights are playing their footy. I think they've had some injuries there. They've also had some change in positions with some suspensions, and they still managed to show up. And to leave a team at 0 points is really standing your mark in the competition. And for them to do that repeatedly is really good. But Yasmin Meeks ended up suffering a knee injury, so she does go for scans. It'll be interesting to find out what's going on with her. She is a key player to them and definitely a great leader as well. So we wish her all the best and hopefully it's nothing too serious.
Oh, I hope so. She's one of their enforcers.
She's a leader for that team.
Yeah, and they whenever she's playing well, they are usually pretty successful. They only had that one loss against the Roosters, but that was only by 2 points as well. So Knights are a threat in this competition. Before we leave, Shell, is there anything that you wanted to cover? NRLW, Super Rugby, anything?
Oh, actually, sorry. Games for this weekend to keep an eye out will definitely be this Sunday. The Broncos do come up against the Knights, so that will be one to watch out for. It is a Brisbane home ground advantage. So if you're there, be sure to go on down.
Beautiful. And just finally, who you got in the Super W final?
Oh, the Drua for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Sure thing. Sure thing. Absolutely. They were my lock-in for last week. And Tigers, the Smoky didn't come off. But anyway, we'll go again this week. Shelley.
What? Jeez, no good.
All good. Shelley, appreciate your work. We'll check in again next week with you.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you then.
Hello, Falava. My name is Annalisa Seal, and you're listening to Indonesian Footy.
All right, T, joining us today is a special guest, a man doing incredible work in Papua New Guinea. He's helping build the pathways that are shaping the future of the PNG Hunters and, of course, the PNG Chiefs when they come into the NRL. He's going to join us now to tell us all about it, how it's all going. His name is Joey Grimer. Hello, Ogeta, and welcome to Indonesian Footy, brother.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, really, really excited to give your listeners an update as to where we're heading and what's been done in the last couple of years.
Yeah, we can't wait to hear what's happening and some of the things that have blown your mind since going over there. But I know that you're looking after the pathway systems, you know, part of talent identification. But what is exactly your role and what does it entail?
So I'm employed by the PNG RFL and my main role is to establish pathways, create pathways and bring them to a standard that eventually we can move in to a tier one country or a tier one academy, if you like. Currently, PNG, similar to Cook Islands and Fiji, we're a tier two. And for us to aspire to become tier one nations, certainly at that senior level, it starts from what I believe in our academy and our development programs for our young men and women of Papua New Guinea. So to unpack the last 2 or 3 years, we initially concentrated a program that would be ordinarily a development-based fundamental skill program in current Australian NRL programs. And we've cut and pasted and dropped it into Papua New Guinea, but added some PNG flavour to it to make it PNG style, because we have a lot of challenges and a lot of different environments and circumstances that it's not like for like in Australia, New Zealand and England, opposed to what PNG looks like.
Yeah, I could imagine there's so many layers when it comes to your role, and then how when we start in that pathways and then we're, you know, working our way up towards the PNG Chiefs will be introduced in 2028. But when you first put this program in place a few years ago, what was your initial thoughts when it kicked off? You know, what were you most impressed with?
I think the thing that I was most impressed with, T, is that introducing a program and having the standards that we need to become that nation that we want to become in rugby, in terms of rugby league. What makes me proud, T, is that for the first time in our program, first time young men and women have experienced the level of education, the level of discipline that they wouldn't ordinarily have received perhaps at their school or even in their environments at home. And what gives me great pleasure, and if you ask me what does success look like, our academy, no school, no academy. It's simple. It's cut and dry. And last year, because rugby league is such a powerful tool or vehicle, using rugby league as a vehicle, we had 18 young boys go back to school in an attempt to try and make our academy programs, because you wouldn't be eligible or available for selection if you're not at a compliant PNG RFL affiliated school. And let me be honest, it's not really about the rugby league. We have over 800,000 young men and women playing rugby league under the age of 18 in Papua New Guinea. So to find players of certain speed, skill, size, shape, and the savvy or the smarts, they're in abundance. Mm. What our program really narrowly focuses on is the technical, the tactical, but the discipline areas. And we make no apologies for having that hard line that if you do turn up late, if you don't wear your uniform, if you wear your cap backwards, if you don't show respect, you'll be removed from the program and you won't have a second chance. And this is explained to them, again, something that is new in terms of Papua New Guinea Rugby League. We have an induction where we invite mum and dad with the player to sign a code of conduct, a medical waiver form, a media consent form. So these are all new because we have to get them printed out in Tokpisin. And it's that fundamental process, which in Tier 1 countries are the norm, rolling that out and having everyone know what they're accountable for and what their actions are. Most of these young men and women won't make it in rugby league, but if we can give them a sense of understanding of actions and the consequences of decisions, we're going to make them better role models for their community, villages and regions. We're going to make them better husbands, better fathers and better employees because they know what the consequences are when you're not wearing a uniform or not turning up to work on time.
Yeah, it's great.
That's awesome, mate. It's a real holistic approach, isn't it? You got to, in order to get a high-performing athlete, you need a high-performing person first around those simple habits of what you've explained.
You're exactly right. And going on that high performance, in New South Wales Rugby League for about 5 or 6 years, there was a number of tests when I was in charge of the Parramatta Pathways. There were a number of tests that New South Wales Rugby League encouraged all the NRL junior development and elite clubs to do. It's called the spark testing: speed, power, agility, reaction and quickness. We've done those testing over the past 3 years twice a year with our young men and women at all our ages, and the data shows that the Papua New Guinean boys and girls are fitter, faster and stronger on the same tests. However, where we are a considerable distance behind Tier 1 countries is the technical and the tactical and the discipline areas. And the main focus of our academy program is to reduce the skill gap in the difference between Papua New Guinea and, say, for example, Australian boys and girls. For example, if I may, a non-elite player in Australia receives 137 hours of structured training and gameplay. Because most of our boys and girls play rugby league at school and on the weekend. So they're doing 3 or 4 training sessions and playing 2 full games, one perhaps on a Thursday during a school competition and one on a weekend. In Papua New Guinea, we don't have the system where we have school and rugby league on the weekend with a club. Their school is their club, so there's only one competition. Because of lack of resources, staff, they only receive 22 hours per year of practice and gameplay. So it's a deficit of 120 hours every year. So over 5 years, we are 500 hours behind our counterparts in Australia, New Zealand and the UK. And what exacerbates that is that people feel that or have this impression that Papua New Guineans are born out of their mother's womb with a rugby league in their hand. Yes, they love rugby league, but they don't start playing rugby league to a organised, sanctioned, refereed, officiated level to the age of 15, where Papua New Guinea's counterparts in Australia, New Zealand and UK start around 5. So we're losing 9 years of fundamental development and then the skill gap of about 120 hours per year from the age of 15 to 20. 3 years I've been fortunate enough to coach the junior Kumuls, and the last 8 minutes of every game we've been in front. And that probably shows how important it is to start rugby league at a grassroots level, at a 5 or 6, opposed to a 15, 16. And the issues around resources, we don't play 30-minute halves in Papua New Guinea because of the lack of grounds. We're playing 10 and 12-minute halves to accommodate the large amount of teams to play on a weekend because there's only one or two fields available and we need to get 30 or 40 schools or teams through that, a program on a Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, there's so many obstacles when you're that we're probably not aware of about, the training facilities, the fields, sideline referees, all the officials. And I know it seems like the PNG kids are very athletic and, reach their measures. But when it comes to providing these opportunities to, play more footy or train more hours throughout the year, and, you think back of your junior coaching career, with the Parramatta Eels, and a lot of those kids got to play so much footy where their growth, they got to develop a lot faster than most other kids that hadn't played much footy. But within the program, is there a space to close the gap in helping create more officials and referees and coaches so that it is long-lasting, it is, and it grows... It grows over time so that one day they do have their school competitions, they do have club footy where these pathways and these kids are having more opportunities to train and play more.
Yeah, that's a really good question. The answer to that is yes. Not only my role over there to establish pathways and academies and build or reduce that development gap we were talking about before, we've got a number of managers and stakeholders in Papua New Guinea who are growing the officiation of referees in education. They're actually educators that are upskilling coaches and sideline officials and touch judges, even to the point of team managers understanding my sideline, the platform that we use to enter information on, so the bona fide of that information is true and correct and accurate. So there is a lot of training, education and information being passed out all over Papua New Guinea, because it's no good having an excellent development pathway program if you don't have the capabilities of the staff to run it and the officials to officiate it, because then it becomes the status quo, and then all this work we're doing, we're undoing. So it's an all-focused process.
Joey, one of the other challenges that you said to me when we crossed paths last year when I was over in PNG for that Pacific Sports Show, I know you got your skill development stuff and your resources, but just the simple thing of having a birth certificate so you can actually travel or play in the under-18s. Like, you're telling me that that the players, like, for their birthdays, it's like, how many Christmases have you had? And then that's how you're saying that's the age of what they would sort of know, what they remember. Like, how have you managed to sort those issues out? Because there's going to be a time where they're going to need to travel or they're going to need to play in these development games where it's under-16s or 18s. Like, how's that going?
So it's a bit of an anomaly that in Australia, we have over 80% of the people that live on the east coast of Australia. In Papua New Guinea, 82% of the people live in regional, rural or jungle areas. So they actually, it's the exact opposite. And to go to a hospital or clinic or somewhere where you just can't get a birth, they don't have a birth, deaths and marriages where you get a birth certificate. So there are a lot of people that don't have that opportunity, not through neglect or not wanting to do it, just because it's so challenging to obtain some form of official documentation. So that's something that we're dealing with. And last year we introduced a program that everyone that comes into the national youth competition under 19s must have four things. So they must have a national identity card, they must have a birth certificate, they need to have a photo of their bio data page, or they need to have some sort of document that says when they're a baby, they have what's called a blue book, and they take it to the clinic and they weigh you, and it's got dates and times. So that would suggest the name when the person was born. Now, sometimes genuinely, people do have this, but through whatever it is moving, it may get displaced and lost. And to get an NIND can take up to months, even years, if you want to get a new national identity. So then what we ask, the player to get a statutory declaration or a declaration of oath from a senior pastor or a principal of their school. To the best of their knowledge, how do they recall the age of this person? Outside those documents, men, we will not register any of the players in the NYC. Why that's so important is because when they come into the NYC, if they haven't got an NID or a passport, what the PNG RFL will do, we will get the officials to come to a training session and we will pay for those young men, those under-19s in the national youth competitions. The PNG RFL will assist them with the officials going to training. They do their biometrics with their fingerprinting, their eyes, and get all their details. And then from that date, there is a registered stamp or registered information in the database, and then they would be able to obtain a national identity document, which is the process where they can get a passport. So that's some of the innovations that the PNG RFL are doing at our NYC level. Should we intervene and assist with this? Is this more governmental than rugby league based? Probably. But it just allows an opportunity for our young men and women, when they do get a passport, to go to the Q Cup or the New South Wales Rugby League, or to go to the UK or have an opportunity to travel outside of Papua New Guinea so they can do some work or play rugby league and assist their family back home by sending a greater amount of money. So it's life-changing.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, sport is much more, it's much more than just rugby league over there. And for it to see it such having such a big impact with the people of PNG, yeah, it's a beautiful thing to see, and keen to see how far this goes. But I'll come back to you on the program and sort of the end goal and the vision. But recently, we've seen three players, local players, Garo Voro, Maria, and Finley Glare, all being signed with the PNG Chiefs. Yeah, how much do you think that would mean to the people of PNG to see their own be part of this NRL team?
Get a bit emotional about this question. Those two young men that you mentioned, first and third, Finley Glare was my first ever junior Kumuls captain in 2023. I found him in Lae and selected him as our captain, and he's just moved heaven and earth to get to where he is through his dedication and just through his relentlessness. He deserves it so much. There's no one outside these two or three men that deserve an opportunity to be the first Papua New Guineans signed with the PNG Chiefs. And I commend the coaching staff, Willie Peters, Mick Shamus, Liam Ayoub, and the management, Lorna McPherson, for this wonderful achievement to have three Papua New Guinean young men represent their country. The second one, Moira, he was just an incredible talent. Comes from the Central Province and unfortunately 2 years ago suffered a broken ankle in the PM's 13 game, but he's ripping trees out of the ground in London playing for Jason Demetrio. And the third one, Guy Rivoro, I found him in a place called Seghedi, which is about an hour and a half away from the capital port, Moresby. I went to a school competition for the Central Debaris. And I seen him play and I thought, who was this Jerome Luai lookalike? He looks like him. He was quite a skinny young boy. He was 16 at the time. And I was more impressed with his defence than I was with his offence. So after the game, I went to speak to him. And I can speak top pisson, and I was speaking to him in pidgin. But he couldn't speak pidgin. He could only speak his native tongue because I wanted to see if he'd be eligible and just see what he's about for the junior Kumuls in 2024. So I brought him into the junior Kumuls, and he couldn't talk English, and he really struggled in top pigeon, in pissing. So those two boys, given where they came from, Gyro comes from a village on a coastal area where the tide comes in, he has no rugby field. The tide goes out, they've got posts, they've got everything, they've got a rugby field. So that's the level of worlds apart that this young man, Gyro Viro, has, living in a village where the tide comes in, he can't play or train. The tide goes out in his village and he's playing rugby league weekends and training through the day. To now he's living in one of the best countries in the world, and he just broke the London Broncos record, scored 44 points last week in a game where they're undefeated after 16 rounds, just about to go back into Super League. That's what we're doing with this rugby league programs. If I don't go to that carnival, I don't see Gyro Viro. He doesn't play junior Kumuls. He doesn't get into the Hunters. He doesn't get picked for PM's 13 and doesn't get an opportunity to play in the Super League under Jason Demetriou, a fantastic coach in London.
Mm-hmm.
So a kid that struggled in his village is now signed a minimal development contract with NRL and will be coming back as in 2028. That's life-changing, not only for him and his family, but his whole village.
Yep.
Because the old energy that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. That couldn't be more true in Papua New Guinea.
Joey, I'm absolutely, I'm blown away, honestly, by just listening to all the different challenges and what it's going to take to get this side successful in 2028. And to hear stories like that, that's unbelievable. I absolutely love hearing. Yeah, there's not enough time to be able to go through it all. But one final one from me. Look, T, you know, alluded to the fact that you were in the Junior Parramatta pathway system, and some of the players that came out of your Harold Matts team, yeah, Jared Hayne, Tony Williams, Talima Tautai, Tim Manor, Chris Keating, Trent Hodkinson. You went undefeated to beat the Penrith side that had Masada Youssef, Joseph Paulo, Michael Jennings, Tim Grant. Like, unbelievable. When you reflect on your time there, you've been at the Super League, NRL level, but now you're giving back in a different way. And when you see a field that is washed away with a tide, and then can come back when the tide's gone. Like, how does that make you feel knowing that the work that you're doing, it's just bigger than anyone could ever imagine. It's bigger than yourself. It's bigger than rugby league.
Yeah, Sam, I'm so appreciative and love the fact that my wife and I, my two kids, because they're involved in this. The sacrifice is huge because I'm away three quarters of the year away from my wife and my two kids in Papua New Guinea. But what outweighs that is the way that I feel with the rawness. And it's going back to those years that you're just referring to, those players, Sammy. You're talking about those young men that came through that program, and a lot of them didn't have what other people have in a structured family life and parental mentoring and things like that. And by default, you become a mentor to them, and they look up to you so much and would do anything for you. That's not dissimilar to what I'm experiencing in Papua New Guinea. These men and women don't have what most of us in first-tier countries have. They live quite differently. Their network of a family and faith is quite different to what we understand and what a lot of people understand in Tier 1 countries or in Australia in particular. So going back to Papua New Guinea, it's taken me back to 2004, and I'm going back to training and teaching the same skills and drills that I taught Jared, Chris, Tim, all those, Chris and Anu, all those young men that have come through and played not only for their state but played for their country. And we won't see the benefit of what we're doing, Sammy, for another 2 or 3 years. So we just need to be patient. We need to continue to build capabilities in people that are based in Papua New Guinea, because at the end of the day, Sammy and T, I can't be there for the rest of my life. So yeah. I want to pass on my knowledge, my experience to Papua New Guinean people, and they deliver the program in the same standards but deliver it in their own way. I don't want them to deliver it like Joe Grimer or, you know, Sam Wilkins. It's not about that, but the standards that we drive, that's going to make the difference.
You answered my question for me. So you know, about being patient. It's going to take 2-3 years, but your plan is to pass on your knowledge so that they, you know, they self-run their tournaments and keep that discipline that you've been teaching them. So, man, it's been an honor to have you on the show. It's it's making me feel quite happy just to hear some of those stories, but also the growth and the sacrifices that you've made yourself to, you know, make an impact in Papua New Guinea. We need more people like you, bro.
Absolutely, Joey. Honestly, we really appreciate your time. I'm sure that someone's going to be the next Jared Hayne. I've got no doubt under your care, there's going to be a Jared Hayne coming out of there. So you keep doing God's work over there, brother, and we'll keep shedding the light for you as well, spreading the word. It's amazing to hear. So much love to you.
Love you guys, mate. And to T and Sammy, as we say in Tok Pisin, look a mile behind. That means see you later.
Look at you behind. Sweet as. Thank you too much, brother.
Give me 3 answers for this one.
Yes, this is our game of give me three. Before we get started, I just want to say a big thank you to Joey Grimer. You know, it was a great chat. And
that was unreal, that chat.
He is doing God's work, and I love, you know, how passionate he is about the Papua New Guinea people, the pathways, and the community over
that
there.
That Guy Ovoro's story, that was special to hear. And I can't wait for him to get an NRL debut, because they will have, like, that's, you know, he, like Joey Grimer and people telling the story of how he actually got there. Like, that's a story that will be told forever.
And when he said that story, we seen the eyes watering up.
Yeah.
Like, he means every word that he says when it comes to the PNG players and the pathways. So thank you again, Joey Grimer. But this is our time for Give Me Three, our personal version of categories, where we take in turns each week. We're coming up with a category, and then I'll ask you the question. You have to give me the answers. We keep a score. The loser at the end of the year gets a jersey of their choice, and I'm not going to let you do what you done to me last year. And
what did I do last year?
Even the scores.
No, that was from our producer. He really wanted to.
Yeah, nah, because I want there has to be a winner or loser.
Favorite.
Winner or loser.
I was his favorite. He didn't like you as much. So
27-21 my way. Now my question for you is a fun one. You should know this, or you should know at least.
Well, I've got some catching up to do, so at least let me catch up here. 27-21. So.
Well, just with a quick update, give me three Indonesian footy players that have signed with the Perth Bears. NRL team.
Yep. Sorensen.
Who's that?
The Penrith Panthers back rower.
What's his first name?
Sorensen. Just, why do I need his first name?
Well, give me his name, bro. He's won 4 premierships.
I know, but is it Trent?
Trent Sorensen. Oh, my days.
Is it Brett?
Is it Brett Sorensen?
I just know him as Sorensen. Right,
we'll park that one. Go another two. Park that one.
Another one. Sifa Talakai.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. There's your one.
So there's 1.5. Give me half a point there, son. There's a young up-and-comer from Paddy's Blacktown, but I can't remember his name.
Ooh, I was going to say he's a good one.
Yeah. Who else is there? Who else? Nah, I'm not. I can't think of a third one.
I would give you a full point for Sorensen, but I find that pretty disrespectful.
Well,
that
he's
also Tongan.
I know. Well, that's the Sorensen's the
Tongan. So I'm going to give you, and I know it's difficult with Union as well, so I'll give you half a point, 1.5 points.
No, I'm not happy with that.
Why?
Because, give me the points.
You said Brett Sorensen. He's won 4 premierships and he's Tongan.
Right, give me what it rhymes with, or just the first letter.
No, because you'll get it straight away.
Yeah, but I've got half a point. Just
there's a C in his name.
There's a C in his name.
Yep, could be first letter, could be last, could be in the middle.
C, Mick.
1.5 points. Scott Sorensen.
Oh, Scott.
You got Seal Sipatalakai. The young Paddy's boy is Josiah Saki.
Yeah.
Kit Lauli'i, Luke Lauli'i.
Oh, Lauli'i.
Chris Viaila. I should have Isaac Fa'asuamaliawi.
Oh, the brother.
Yes.
There's a fair few.
And I'm sure there'll be a few more.
Do you know why? I would have known this if our old producer was still here. He loves his Perth Bears.
Nice.
See you later.
And quick. One and a half points, mate.
I'll take the 1.5. But hey, great show today, T. That's us for today. Make sure you tell your footy loving friends about Nisian footy. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Pacific website. And we'll catch you on Friday with more Nisian footy.
Khaki Bear.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.